Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, we talk with Bill Eddy about co-parenting, gatekeeping, custody, and court. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, and today our guest is Bill Eddy. You have heard me talk about Bill Eddy many times throughout the history of this show. He is a social worker and a lawyer. He has written the book on educating judges and lawyers around the world about high conflict people, so he's going to be here with us today to talk about co-parenting, and we even get into court issues as well and custody issues. But before we get to that interview, if you have not been to our website recently and want to be a guest on our Survivor Story show, our podcast, please do go to narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the form, there is a button that says guest form. Click on that button and away we will go from there. And we are also accumulating letters to my narcissist compilation episode. And again, go to narcissistapocalypse.com. Side of the page, there's a button that says send voicemail. You press that button, you record up to 5 minutes, press it twice, records up to 10. We are accumulating those letters to my narcissist compilation letters. I've said it too many times for that episode. I have no idea what I'm saying, everyone. Anyway, we are accumulating those letters for that episode. And if you do not want to read the letter yourself and you want me or my old pal Melissa to read the letter for you instead, send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com and put letters to my narcissist in the subject line. And, you know, before we get to the show, for everyone out there, we are running a little bit of a raffle of sorts. I guess that's what it's called. We're giving away 10 $25 gift cards to Amazon. If you want to participate in a questionnaire we have about the demographics of this show, I will leave the link in the show notes for you. We're looking to, you know, we're doing some advertising. We're trying to get to know you guys better. So please, you know, fill out one of those questionnaires for us. And we are doing the raffle on September 1st, 2021. And besides that, everyone, we have our Patreon if you want to support the show. So we have extra episodes that never made it to air. We have follow-up episodes with former guests and more. We have virtual support groups on there that we run every Wednesday and Saturday through Zoom. And we also have our support forum board. And over the next month to month and a half, things are going to be a little bit different on there. We're going to be adding in a lot more functionality. So stay tuned for that as well. And now, you know, without further ado, here is my episode with Bill Eddy. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse, everyone. With me today, I have Bill Eddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm really glad to be talking with you.
Well, this is a pleasure for me. Everyone who listens to the show over the last 2 years has heard me mention your name numerous times. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we did an episode with a divorce lawyer named Helen, and she was a domestic violence lawyer and a divorce attorney from Seattle. And she said, if you go and see a lawyer – and they have never heard of Bill Eddy or has any of his books, do not hire them. So that was my introduction to you. And, you know, you are, you know, you deal with high conflict personality theory. You develop that concept. You are a driving force behind people who present the most challenging behaviors in the court system. And you're an expert in managing disputes involving high conflict situations and five high conflict personality types, including a subset of those with narcissistic, borderline, antisocial, histrionic, and paranoid personality disorder. You have trained over 200,000 professionals in 10 countries on understanding and managing high conflict disputes, including lawyers, judges, mediators, managers, human resource professionals, business people, healthcare administrators, college administrators, homeowners, association managers, you know, law enforcement, therapists, et cetera, et cetera. You are a former, or you are a social worker of 12 years. Then you became a lawyer. You know, you are, you know, as I say in most of my intros, you are the foremost expert in these types of individuals in court, but you also now are doing a lot of stuff with co-parenting, family situations, and today we're going to be talking about co-parenting. So thank you for being here. And I was introduced to you based on the BIF system. Do it for me.
Brief, informative, friendly, and firm.
Yes.
And I can explain each part of that.
Oh, yeah. Go for it right now. Thank you.
Okay. So the idea is, and I really learned this having been a therapist and then a family lawyer, as my clients were getting in all these escalating email conversations. So I said, keep it brief. A paragraph is almost always sufficient, even if you're responding to two pages of hate mail, et cetera. Then informative, just focus on straight information, something, you know, what time an event is, who's going to be there, or something about healthcare, or something about school grades or activities. Just keep it straight information, no opinions, no emotions, no judgments, no defenses, because that just escalates things. Just straight information. Then just have a friendly tone, like a friendly introduction, like you've made a request, they've responded, and it's hostile, but you say, thank you for letting me know your point of view. Or at the end, it's Friday afternoon, have a good weekend, or something like that. Just a touch of friendliness. And then firm, meaning end the hostility of the conversation. So it doesn't mean be harsh. It's just like, you've said all you're going to say, and you're done. And so I think of it as pouring cold water on the flames. And it just takes out the conflict. And the other person, like, there's nothing really they can do. If they wanted to be keep being hostile, there's nothing in there for them to be hostile about, usually. So, yeah. And so we wrote this recent book, Biff for Co-Parent Communication, with 28 examples of how to do that. And it's a simple method, but it does take practice because you have to kind of restrain yourself a little bit.
And that's a good thing about your book. And, you know, there's a lot of different examples, but you also have the areas in the book as it's a workbook at the same time. And one of the interesting things when it comes to Biff, when you're dealing with people who are blame speaking and you're trying not to do that yourself, there are certain situations where you have to assess, do I respond to this or do I not respond to this? And what is worthy of a response? Are you able to kind of explain what is worthy and what is not worthy?
Yes. So if it's just between you and the other person, usually co-parent, and you're thinking, oh, well, I'm going to set them straight or I'm going to change how they think, that's probably not a response to bother with because you're not going to change how they think and you're not going to set them straight. Now, if there's information that needs to be shared or they're misinformed and you need to clarify something, then that would be a reason and a BIF would be the way to do it. Now, if they've included other people, I recommend, you know, they've copied like your mother and your lawyer or something. I recommend that you give a BIF response and you also copy it to the same people because those are the people that start forming an opinion from the first email. And then once they see yours, they go, oh, okay, so she's taking care of it, or he's not bothered by this. So I think that's those are the key things. Is does if you're thinking of changing a mind, forget about it. If it needs to be informing other people or the single person, then you should go ahead with a BIF.
And when it comes to different forms of communication, you have some former couples who are having a very difficult time communicating with email or by phone, and they have, I guess, special apps. So how's a way to kind of get around this special app with also communicating to teachers and maybe instructors and things along those lines?
Well, I think just really being straightforward with it, because you know that it is going to show up somewhere else. So I think you should always, in a divorce or custody dispute, is write your emails as if the judge will be reading them. And so some apps like Our Family Wizard has a tone meter, and it doesn't tell you what to do, but it tells you you're getting into trouble. So that's certainly useful. But I think asking yourself, is it brief? Is it just straight information? Is it friendly? Is it firm? Will really help you not get deeper into the quicksand of the situation.
And another thing that, you know, as you bring it up here first with, a lawyer or something along those lines, teachers, I never realized or never thought about that when a teacher is now involved, all of a sudden an innocent bystander is involved in your life in a way that they shouldn't be in many ways. And that can be your child's baseball coach, family members. So you have to educate them as well. And how do you do that?
Yeah. And just do it briefly, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
But what we suggest is that you do want to let them know. So if they've got a correspondence that's hostile from your ex, and it's saying that you're being irresponsible about Johnny or something like that, is you want to respond with straight information about the issue they've raised, but also say, to a teacher, to a coach, et cetera, I'm trying to keep you out of, you've had a communication that's really about a private matter, and I'd like to keep you out of this situation. But if you have any questions, feel free to contact me. And here's my phone number, email, or whatever. So that what they hear is that you're not wanting them to get involved, but you're not defensive about what's being said because you have more accurate information and you're happy to talk about it more if they want. The reality is teachers, coaches, et cetera, don't want anything to do with people's high conflict divorces. And so they really don't like it when they get pulled in like that, but it does influence how they think. And I've spoken with many clients who say, my co-parent, my ex-wife or ex-husband has been talking to the teacher, spreading bad rumors about me. What should I do? And so if it's the teacher of your child, you want to go talk to that teacher, but basically say, look, I want to keep you out of this, but he or she has kind of been giving you some misinformation. So I want to make sure you know this is the accurate situation. And then let me know if you want anything else.
So about 13 years ago in my life, I had a high conflict neighbor and it got pretty testy. I didn't know anything about this. I just knew I had to bite my tongue no matter what. And I had a roofer come over and I said to the roofer, whatever you do, don't engage. This person's going to come out and bark at you. Just don't engage because that's just going to make my life worse or just going to make the situation worse. So is this kind of something you also recommend to people who are family members or people in these situations? Don't kind of defend me in a way?
Yeah, it's a very good idea, is to warn people, especially if you're starting to go through a divorce or custody dispute, warn them that they may hear things that aren't accurate and that people may want to try to get them to take their side. And so warn them that I want you just to stay neutral. I don't need you to be my advocate. I just want to encourage you, don't engage with this. Kind of like you said, is if someone's trying to pull you in, just say, you know, no thanks, you know, I'll leave that up to you folks and stay out of it.
Yeah, because in my situation, the roofer did not listen to me. And I had at that point had enough of my neighbor and decided, you know what, I'm going to call the police this time and at least file a report of harassment. And they said to me, police are already there. And I asked, what are you talking about? She called the police on the roofer the next day, and they came over. She wanted to press charges of attempted murder because at one point he said, get away from me or I'm going to kill you. And anyway, that's how it erupted. But that with these high conflict people, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, not engaging sometimes is the best play.
Yeah, well, it is good to not engage, but also be aware that extreme statements will be made, that there'll be distortions of what's been said. So someone, you know, I have no idea what the person said, but I'm quite a skeptic after working in this field for decades, is someone telling me, you know what so-and-so said, and I'll go, okay, what'd they say? Oh, okay, well, that's interesting. Without acting like I'm believing it or not, because a whole lot of stuff that gets said is an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, today, the world needs to have a healthy skepticism because there's a lot of statements that are being made by what we call high conflict people with the five different personalities you described that are exaggerations or simply totally false. And it's people are unprepared for that today, but we're teaching them. And don't believe everything you hear. Check things out. Is that really true? And is that really a crisis? That's why I tell people, ask yourself those two questions when someone tells you, oh, my goodness.
So, you know, in your book, you have a section of the three A's, which is admonishments, advice, and apologies. And there's the one part that I found interesting is at a certain point you say, avoid apologies. So can you discuss apologies and why you should avoid them?
Yeah, it's counterintuitive. And I'd say with 80% of people, apologies are really a good thing and help resolve a lot of conflicts. But with high conflict people, who I think are 10% or more of people, they see things in all or nothing terms. And so when you apologize for something really tiny, what they hear is you agree it's all your fault. And when you do that in writing, they save that. And then they pull it out of their pocket every so often and say, remember when you admitted it's all your fault. And so what we've learned is just steer clear of that in a Biff response. There may be a place for a structured apology. Maybe it's a mediation session or something. But don't put this in writing to an angry, high-conflict person, or it becomes ammunition.
Okay.
And it's sad to say, but that seems to be the case.
And another thing in the book that I hope you can discuss here is gatekeeping and what that actually means, because I found that to be quite interesting.
Yeah, so gatekeeping is a term that's become much more common in divorce and custody matters over, I'd say, last 10, 12 years. Basically, what it means is one parent is used to being like in charge of the kids. And so now that there's a separation, divorce, or not, even if people aren't married, the dynamics are the same. They're saying, well, the kids don't want to see you, or the kids, it wouldn't be good for you to take them to that activity, or you can't see them on this weekend because my grandparents are here, even though it's the other parents' weekend. So they're doing things that standing between the kids and the other parent, their co-parent. And so this is called gatekeeping. Now, it's generally thought of as a negative thing. In other words, that's not good. You shouldn't be standing between the kids and the other parent. But in court cases, we're starting to see it get refined. So there's unhealthy gatekeeping and protective gatekeeping. And so in some cases, people say, I think you're high right now, so I'm not going to let you take the kids. And that makes sense if the person's high right now and they're driving and this and that. But it also gets used inappropriately when people are accused of protective gatekeeping when there really is a health risk or a safety risk. So it's that idea of standing in the way of the other parent's relationship with the kids. And mostly it's not a good thing, but occasionally it's realistic.
You know, I speak to a lot of survivors, I get a lot of emails, and I guess this also relates to, the fine line between parental alienation and being a good parent. So, what is that line? Is there a line, or is that just on a case-by-case basis?
Well, it's interesting. They're really, like with parental alienation, it's either a really big deal or it's not there. I don't see many cases where there's just a little bit of it or it's vague. It's usually, I can talk about that for an hour or two, but it's really emotional. And people don't realize it's emotional and it's transferred to the child emotionally. And it's something the person is sharing, their fear, their anger, all of that, their jealousy, et cetera, with the child. And the child absorbs that and builds a resistance to the other parent. So parental alienation, which I think is a real thing, but people have to be careful with the courts because the phrase parental alienation is not favored by the courts. They certainly have rejected parental alienation syndrome, so don't ever mention that in court. But more what's helpful is to talk about behaviors. And so, the mother's engaged in an alienating behavior such as enlisting, blocking this, making appointments during my time, et cetera. I also said the mother, it could be the father. As a family lawyer, I've had both mothers and fathers be rejected by their children because of alienating behaviors. So that's, and that really bleeds into the gatekeeping issue, because that's often where you see the children start resisting or refusing to be with a parent because the other parent's so overextended in blocking the kid's relationship. So gatekeeping and alienating behaviors are often the same thing.
And when it comes to, the high conflict person, and I wouldn't say gatekeeping situations, but more of changing or changes that are going on. There's a big part of your book that deals with what do you do when big changes happen, things about social media and a lot of stuff. Are these things that you put in the divorce decree that you recommend to people, or are these things that will be constantly changing?
Well, I think the more high conflict it is, the more specific the divorce decree needs to be about what can be done, what can't be done. First of all, I encourage judges, lawyers, mediators, etc., to be specific about things that aren't okay, that often lead like to alienation. And so I say, you know, say specifically, don't discuss your legal case with the children. Don't schedule activities during the other parent's parenting time without the other parent's permission, like doctor's appointments and things. Because that's often how we see this show up. It's like, oh, well, of course the doctor's appointment's more important than their time with the other parent, things like that. Don't cry about the case in front of your children. It's not just anger, it's also sadness. Don't show court papers to the children. Don't tell the children that the divorce was the other parent's fault. Don't talk about whose fault it was. Don't talk about why you don't have much money. Don't say, well, I have to give all the money to your mother, or your father doesn't pay me enough, or those kinds of things. I'm in San Diego, about 100 miles from Disneyland. And so we hear things like, well, sorry, kids, I can't take you to Disneyland. I have to give your mother all my money. Or sorry, kids, we can't go to Disneyland because your father barely pays me enough for us to eat. And so, you know, poor Disneyland gets blamed for everything. But being specific about what to do, what not to do, helps. Now, you talk about changes. So various changes, like if people move, and then does that mean they change schools? All of that, that's what we put in the Biff for Co-Parents book, is a lot of correspondence, how to write and how to respond to a hostile email about these important decisions. So we've got 28 examples of conversations and ways you might write those.
So I have a situation here. I don't know if this is a good one, but this is a tricky one I'm going to give you. So you have parents are divorced, living in separate homes, and one parent is responsible. Let's say it's 50-50 custody. Mm-hmm. One parent is responsible. The other one is irresponsible, especially with money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's say, you know, the electricity bill isn't paid. Or, you know, they didn't pay the insurance on their car. And, you know, that puts a guilt aspect on one parent of, oh, my God, I'm going there and they don't have this stuff. And they might cross over that line. Is there a way within their co-parenting system of how to kind of deal with this and get this person to actually be responsible?
Well, what's tricky, like with high-conflict people, high-conflict people have a personality pattern that's focused on blame, all-or-nothing thinking, unmanaged emotions, extremes of behavior. And if it's a personality pattern, you're not going to flick a switch and change that. Mm-hmm. You're not going to persuade them that they should now become responsible. I mean, people are 30, 40, 50 years old. It's not a time that they're going to go, oh, I didn't realize I was being irresponsible. Of course, now I'll be responsible. So I think it's more looking at, in a sense, carrots and sticks. Is what are the negative consequences? Is this something I have to go back to court on? Or something I won't do? If they won't do this, then I won't do that. And also the carrots is, you know, I really would appreciate if you did such and such. Maybe I should take care of this so that you don't have to worry about it. For example, I have people who, you know, like dads maybe haven't been used to buying the clothes. And so they pay a little bit more support and mom buys all the clothes instead of mom saying, well, you're not paying your half, and I resent that, is work out a solution. It may not be something, you know, when it works out well, you see people come up with these solutions and they tinker with things and they help each other out. But when it's high conflict, it's not, the issue is really not the issue. The personality is the issue, and don't count on changing that. Work around it.
So in this case, what someone would do would be they would write a BIF response to their ex-partner. If their partner did not do anything about it, then they could take the evidence and have things changed from there where they might be able to get more of the custody. Would that be fair?
Yeah, and I've seen that happen. And that's why keeping your end of email correspondence really clean with BIF, you look good and you go to court and say, I raised this issue 2 times or 3 times, received no response, or just received this hostile email back. And therefore, it's clear this isn't going to change unless we have some new court orders. So it's, yeah, I think of all the writing as evidence. That's really sad to think of it that way. But especially that one really super nasty thing you write and hit send, that's the thing that's going to come back to bite you. So you really want to be get in the habit of doing BIF responses instead of, you know, letting yourself go.
So you have also created something called New Ways for Families. And that is something that people can purchase through your website. I think you did it in conjunction with online parenting. Is that true? Yes.
Yeah. So it's a 12-session online parenting, co-parenting class. And thousands of people have taken it. Many people have been court ordered. We encourage judges order both parents take it so they're speaking the same language to each other and to the kids. But people can just take it on their own. And it's easy. Come to our website, highconflictinstitute.com, and then look in the menu for New Ways for Families. We're also now, we've been training coaches who do 3 or more sessions of coaching with the 12-session online class. And that makes the whole package kind of an inexpensive way to actually talk to somebody and also learn some new skills. And BIF is one of the skills we teach in that method, as well as how to make proposals to each other and get respectful responses, as well as to give yourself encouraging statements to cope while you're going through all of this, and tips for things you can say to the kids. So we actually have the 12-session co-parenting class, as you said, with online parenting programs, OPP. And we also have 4 hours of parent-child, New Ways for Families also. So it's really about teaching skills that people can use anywhere in their life. We call it the 4 big skills, flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behavior, and checking yourself. And it really, it's very positive. People feel very good about it. And also with the subscription, we have support sessions. We have question and answer sessions and such. So that it's really building a support community, which I know you know something about. That's what you're doing.
And the good thing about, you know, I have a membership for a year. I pay monthly. I think it costs me like $13 a month or something along those lines. It's very cheap, and it's a good deal. There's a lot of information on there, useful. I've used it with my own coaching clients. You know, just a great little program. And you know, you're developing so many things. I mean, you've written. I can't tell you how many books you've written. You've written so many books. And one of them was a book that's a very famous book called Splitting. And usually when you go to Amazon and you type in this kind of stuff, Splitting is one of the first books you'll see when it comes to this. And you're coming out with a sequel to the book. Is it a second edition or just a continuation of what you've learned?
It's a second edition, which includes what was in the first. But there's updates of some of that information, and there's 2 additional chapters. So there's more information than before about antisocial personality disorder, because we wrote Splitting originally for dealing with a co-parent with borderline or narcissistic personality disorder. But we're seeing a lot of antisocial personality disorder mixed in, And antisocial is the one that really deceives people and really confuses and deceives legal professionals, counselors, lawyers, mediators, judges. And so we want to give people the heads up with this. But also we include more tips on how to present your case. We know a lot of people are trying to find a lawyer and they want to say, how do I explain my case in simple terms? So we give suggestions for that. Or people who represent themselves in court and how to present your case there. So, and this just comes out July 1st, 2021. So it's really ripe for what people are needing, I think.
Yeah. So when it comes to the high conflict person in divorce, in court, just the whole process, even if you're not in court and you're just doing your own, mediation yourself, your own divorce yourself, I say to people, when you go to court, you can't tell anyone, oh, this is what this person is. This is what this person is. You have to come up with your own strategies. But at the same time, these people might not be diagnosed. So do you have to really, when you get splitting, if someone recommends it, do you look at it and say, figure out which type you think yours is and then develop a strategy?
Yes and no. In other words, it's a lot of general principles where it doesn't matter. You really want to take the approach like presenting patterns, not diagnoses. Don't say in court, well, I think my wife has borderline personality disorder. My husband has narcissistic personality disorder. Don't say that. The judges are offended by that. Instead, you say, my co-parent has a pattern of behavior that's very concerning. She yells and screams at the kids. She throws things. Sometimes she locks them in their rooms. And she lies to professionals or misleads them. And she's undermining my relationship. She's saying all these negative things. So you organize like your three most concerning patterns and explain these are longstanding patterns. They're not going to change unless we have some really strong court orders. So that's a general approach. In terms of how you interact with specifics to certain personalities, if someone, say, your co-parent is borderline, then you really want to emphasize empathy, staying calm. I can understand your frustration. Let's look at what we can do. And if your co-parent's narcissistic, then you want to use the word respect a lot. Like, I do respect your relationship with our child, and I do respect your time, and I hope you'll respect my time too. So these are special things. And if you think you're dealing with an antisocial, don't waste a lot of energy trying to change them. Really think carrots and sticks. If you do this, this is the benefit, and this is what we'll, I'll have to do if you don't do that. And don't think you're going to make the other person do something. Think of what you can do different to deal with the situation. So anyway, those are some general principles and then some specific principles.
Some people want to give consequences, or at least, we're in a court setting now, or this person really isn't agreeing with anything that is going on. They've never been given consequences. How do you get to someplace where there is a consequence for someone, where there is something at risk when they want to just kind of keep this going?
Yeah, well, that's part of where you may really need to go to court. Mm-hmm. And I encourage people to try to settle your case out of court. It won't be as escalated as if you go to court. But sometimes you need an adult in the room saying, you can't do that, and this will be what happens, such as reduction in parenting time. So you sometimes need to go to court to do that. But the other is, often parents are helping each other out in different ways. And you say, if you continue to do such and such, I'm not going to be able to continue helping you in this other way. So, you know, sometimes people ask for favors. They say, well, will you switch or do this or that? And if you can, it's a good idea to do it. A show of good faith and a role model of getting of cooperativeness. But if the other parent's doing certain negative things, you say, I'm going to have to stop doing this, this, and this. So it's up to you. I hope that won't be necessary. But if you continue doing X, Y, Z, I'm going to have to stop doing A, B, C.
You know, and on top of your splitting and now the sequel, another great book that you have is High Conflict Personalities in Court. What's the official title of that book?
Well, High Conflict People in Legal Disputes.
Yeah, which is a great book, great book.
And that was really the first book. And that's already been on its second edition for about 5 years now. So in 5 more years, we may have to have a third edition. But all of these, the basic principles in all these books are continue to be the same. And unfortunately, the lack of knowledge by many legal professionals is still the same. So often I find clients and individuals become more educated than the professionals they're working with. And what I say is find professionals you can communicate with, and you can share the tips you have that may help them help you in your case.
So I have some audience questions.
Sure.
Okay. I don't know if you'll be able to answer them, or we've probably already answered them anyway. So how do you help a child, or how do you prevent your child from not having the same issues as your high conflict ex-spouse?
Excellent question. And here's my recommendation. First is the new ways for families teaching those four big skills is a good thing to learn yourself and then teach those to your child. But in general, is these four big skills are flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behavior, and checking yourself. And you can teach your child those skills. We call them the four big skills for life. You can teach your child those skills every day in little ways when things pop up. You know, you see something on TV and somebody's screaming at somebody else, and you can say, Johnny, that guy's not managing his emotions very well, is he? Or we have to make a decision. Let's use our flexible thinking. We could do this, we could do that, we could do that. And so if we use our flexible thinking, which would be the best idea if it's something that you're allowing the child to participate in deciding? So that the kids start getting this idea, flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behavior, and checking yourself are good things to do. And that's what my mom's doing, or that's what my dad's doing. And then when the other parent is acting the opposite of that, like unmanaged emotions, the child can start to, oh, you know, mom has a hard time with managed emotions, and comes back from time with mom and tells dad, you know, mom's just like so angry. She's like unmanaged emotions. And dad can say, wow, well, some people have a harder time with that than other people, but we're getting pretty good at managing our emotions, Johnny, aren't we? So teaching those four big skills will help, in a sense, immunize the child from learning those from the other parent, or learning the negatives from the other parent.
And here is another question, which this one I hear a lot from people, which is phone time. When one parent calls the child at the ex-spouse's home, and they are given a fraction of the time that they were supposed to be given. And then the other parent, when the child is at the house, calls and then wants all the time in the world to occupy. Is this just one of those situations where you have to just record everything and then go back to court? How do you kind of get around something like that?
Well, to me, when that continues to be a problem, what I really recommend is that you don't have phone time with a parent when the child's at the other parent's house. That both parents, it's just that's that parent's time, uninterrupted. You're going to see your child in 2 days, so if you don't talk to them for 2 days, it's not the end of the world. And I've had many cases where we've had that court order, that there's no phone contact. It's really the parallel parenting idea, and you can do that with a 50-50 schedule, an 80-20 schedule. It's the idea that you're not contacting, you're not intruding into the other parent's time. And that's really a big issue. When the door is open for that, it's very disruptive and actually can contribute to alienation. I had a case, I represented a mom as her lawyer. She had 2/3 of the parenting time, but dad had this phone time like you're describing, and he used it to quiz the child, what's mom doing now? What's your stepdad doing now? And eventually turned the boy against his mother because of these intrusive phone calls. Now, he was a very high conflict person with a personality disorder. But that's the big solution. And judges are starting to realize the benefit of that. The smaller solution, I would think, would be, you know, it's tricky about recording because some judges really don't like that because they feel like you're playing cops and spies on each other. But if you do keep track, it's like he gets half an hour and I usually just get 5 minutes. You could present that at court. But I really think the solution to go for is just not having those phone calls.
It just like at the beginning of our conversation when it came to what is, when do you engage and when do you not engage? This is a situation where it's just better to not have any conflict, so just get rid of the situation completely.
Yes, it really, it's sad to say, but it really makes it so much easier.
And you mentioned parallel parenting there. So for people that don't know what parallel parenting is and the difference between co-parenting, can you just kind of explain that and what the why you would have to choose parallel over co-parenting?
Yeah. So let's say 80% of parents can do co-parenting decently. But let's say 20%, the high conflict cases, really that's just constantly filled with conflict. The emails back and forth, you should have done this, you didn't do that. And so parallel parenting is you really stop having all those emails, stop making all those joint decisions, and pretty much live your lives sealed off from each other, except for extreme emergencies. And so whatever the schedule, and of course it's probably easiest if it's 50-50 because they're both very involved with kids that way. And I think of cases I've had that were really high conflict, a lot of allegations, many of them false, that didn't really settle down until they stopped having joint communication except for emergencies. There was no calling into each other's homes. And I think of one case I have, once a year, they meet with a parenting coordinator and map out the schedule for the next 12 months. And then they didn't change the schedule. There was none of this trading weekends, et cetera. It's just all very strict. And I remember my client, who's the father in that case, he just said, it's really working. And sad to say, but what's interesting is some people just can't co-parent very well, but they're decent parents. And this is a way to resolve that. Let them be a good parent and just stop the fight of co-parenting with them.
And another question I got from someone is about triggers, and not triggers specifically from their ex, but when they get triggered by their children who either and her children are innocent in these situations. They don't know that they're doing specific acts or saying certain things, but it keeps that parent in that situation, in that kind of inner turmoil and maybe trauma situation. Is there any recommendations you can help in that situation where they can not be triggered by their children in those situations? Or can you? Is it inevitable that this is going to happen?
Yes and no. I think, first of all, trying not to take that stuff personally, developing your own self-talk that tells you, you know, that's coming from somewhere else. It's not about me. I don't have to take that personally. Also, just telling the kids, you know, you don't have to worry about that. You know, the kids might say, you know, Dad says that we can't go to Disneyland because he has to give you all his money. And so for Mom, it's like, you know, kids, you don't have to think about all that stuff. Those are things for grownups to decide, money, activities, stuff like that. So if there's something you want to do, talk to me about it. And we'll decide what we're going to do. What your father does is going to be up to him. And you're just kids, so don't worry about this stuff. You shouldn't be part of conversations like that, and I'm not going to involve you further. Something like that. I think of a case I had. I was actually consulting with a woman with her four-year-old boy years ago, and Dad was saying all this stuff and involving the child in all these adult discussions and things. And she really learned to say, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to think about that. And I consulted with her for like 12 or 13 years. And she said her son is doing great now. He's 20. And he just really knows what belongs to him and what doesn't belong to him emotionally. You know, and that's just, he just sounds really well prepared for a healthy adult relationship. So I think that's the thing to do when your kids cross a line and just say, kids, you don't have to worry about that.
So before we end off our show, what are things that we kind of haven't discussed that you want everyone to know what you're up to, what you're doing, or just kind of reiterate what you've already said?
Well, just I'll talk briefly again about BIF, that the BIF for Co-Parents book is the third book we have on BIF now, and it's devoted 100% to co-parenting issues, has 28 scenarios, changing doctor's appointments, deciding schools, birthday parties, just all these possible issues. We demonstrate how it's not good to respond, and then how it's good to respond, and how it's good to start those conversations.
And there's scenarios in this book, all these different scenarios. It's not just, they're not just mentioned. I mean, you have conversations in there, full conversations, how to do things for every little thing. It is a really useful book. So I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, it's all different co-parents. So you see names after names. Use, but in the back of the book, I'll just point out, it's on page 219 for people that want to look for it, is the 28 different kind of scenarios: special diet, soccer, lateness, paying for activities, summer vacation, trading weekends, Christmas holiday. We have all those conversations built in. So there's that, and then the splitting book, that's the second edition coming out this year, just has more information. It's what was there before plus more information. So I think we're learning more, and we're trying to pass that on to parents as quickly as possible, because it's really stressful, I think, being a co-parent in modern times where you have so many pressures, the kids have so many issues. We had COVID on top of all of this. So we really want to be supportive of parents and give them all the information we can.
And everything can be found at highconflictinstitute.com. The New Ways for Families is at
conflictplaybook.com. So if you want to take the New Ways for Families and you haven't been court ordered to do it, go to conflictplaybook.com. And if you have been court ordered to do it, go to High Conflict Institute, then New Ways for Families, and then you do the program that you get a certificate for court.
And just so everyone knows, I own all of these and more. I use all of these with my clients as well. All the strategies from court to family situations, everything is useful. I mean, thank you so much for being here. You're kind of an unsung hero for so many people in America and around the world to get themselves through these situations. And, you know, you really deserve a medal from someone really high up. So thank you so much for being here with me today. You already help a lot of people. You're going to help a lot of people listening to the show. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Brandon, for the chance to talk to your people. So your work is great too. So we're all in this together. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And for myself and Bill Eddy, I hope, or we hope, you have a good night.